Professor Bertie Squire. He's Dean of Clinical Sciences and International Public Health at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. He's also Honorary Consultant in Infectious Diseases at the Royal Liverpool Hospital. Good morning, Bertie. How are you?
Good morning, Lisa. I'm well, thank you. I hope you're all well as well.
We are, thank you. Now, we obviously are hearing the news that some restrictions may be lifted from next week. And I wondered, Bertie, when I knew you were coming on, I said, Bertie can explain this to me. I know he can. I wonder if we could talk a little bit about the R or the R0 or the R0 number. And if you could help me with this to get my head around it before we start hearing more about lockdown being eased. My understanding, please correct me, I will need correcting, is that the R represents the rate of reproduction of the virus, so how an infected person infects somebody else.
Yes, absolutely right. So it's often called the reproductive value, and it tracks how many people, on average, will be infected for every one person who has the disease. So if that number is more than one, in other words, somebody who has the infection passes it on average, to more than one other, then the epidemic increases exponentially. So you can see how lots of the effort that we've gone into with the lockdown and the social distancing is all aimed at bringing that number below one, so that any one person with the disease only transmits it to fewer than one. As that happens, the epidemic closes off. So it's a key number guiding the UK government's approach, or one of the measures guiding the UK government's approach to relaxing the lockdown.
And the efforts have been to bring it under one, going between 0.6 and 0.9. How is that measured? How can somebody work that out? Because we're not properly doing the trace and contact and all of that. How's that measured?
So it's measured in a complex kind of mathematical way, looking at the way in which the disease is progressing and the numbers are being measured. And you can imagine it's tricky when we aren't completely clear how many individuals in the community have been infected, but we don't know. So maybe I could make a few other points about R0. It's partly based on the inherent biological features of the virus. So some viruses are really good at transmitting and others are less so. So if we think about the coronavirus, at the start of March, the R was estimated by WHO globally between 2 and 2.5, and then later around 3 or 4 for Europe. So compare that with what we know about seasonal flu, where it was 1.3, or measles, where it's 12 to 18, you can see how different viruses, by their own properties, are better at transmitting than others. But then, that's not a fixed value, because it's very much dependent on behavior. So if an individual or in a society comes into contact with lots of other people, then that number goes up. And you can see how in different environments where, for example, population density is higher, and I bring in here our experience with our colleagues in the Global South, so in many of the African countries where we work, you can imagine how in dense slum areas, in urban areas, the chances of an individual coming into contact with somebody else goes up. So size of population, density, and then finally susceptibility. So we know that the elderly are more susceptible. We've seen this with the difficulties in care homes. That number can go up. So it's a slippery one, isn't it? The biology is key, but then the behavioural things that go around that make a big difference.
And this is where my thinking was going, that at the moment we've got it down below zero, below one. Gosh, that would be good, below zero, wouldn't it? Below one. But as soon as lockdown is lifted, is it likely for us to see it go up again? Because it's all well and good saying social distancing, and if everybody keeps to that. I was in a supermarket yesterday and the amount of people who wanted piggybacks from me as I walked around the aisles was unbelievable. So we're relying on people keeping their distance for us to keep that R down then, aren't we?
Yes, we are definitely relying on people to keep not just distance, but also to think hard about whether they really need to be in contact with others. And you're absolutely right. The tightrope that needs to be walked now is easing lockdown to the extent that it allows some parts of the economy to get going again, but not easing it so much as to see contact numbers of contacts between individuals go up sufficiently to see that number rise. And you can see how if we get back to above one, we may see outbreaks, and it may be that that number goes above one in certain situations. And that's really what we need to be vigilant for.
If you were trying to forecast what restrictions you think would be lifted and would be safe to lift at this moment, what would it be?
So that's a tough one. The way I see it is most likely the parts of the economy that work, where if you like, that some businesses have been more than generous in their shutdown. If you remember when the announcements were made, the wording was something like, if it work from home unless your work requires you to be in a workplace. Now, I know that some organizations interpreted that very stringently, so actually called people to work at home and close down that work. But it may be that some of those activities which do require people to go to the workplace would now be able to open, provided there was safety. And I think one of the reasons why people closed those things down was because they weren't sure that they were going to be able to do so safely. I think one of the things that the lockdown has done is given us time to think about, okay, so if we do actually need people back in the workplace, what do we need to put in place to make that safe and possible? So things like making sure that people's movements through buildings don't result in coming too close, making sure that we think about teams coming in such a way that they're not crowded in offices. So I think it's less what specific parts of the economy, and more, are those things able to put in place the measures that make it safe? I hope that's clear.
It really does. And you're right. I mean, even here in this building, we've gone to a one-way system. And it's all those things that 3 months ago, 4 months ago, none of us would ever have anticipated was going to happen. Now, Bertie, we have been honoured to be able to speak to you and lots of the team at Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine and learning lots about your work. Now, tell us about the school's involvement with Malawi.
Okay, so the school's had a very long engagement with the College of Medicine that is based in the southern part of the country, and with the Ministry of Health. So more than 20 years worth of collaboration with them. And we have a program there called the Malawi Liverpool Wellcome Trust research program, which is an affiliate of the College of Medicine and very generously funded by the Wellcome Trust and many others. And we have staff there and an exchange of individual scientists and clinicians between Liverpool and there. And one of the great, well, I was going to say privileges of the current situation, but the current situation, of course, is not what we would want. But we've been very honoured to be able to share some of our experiences here with our colleagues in Malawi, but not only in Malawi, but also with our collaborations in Zimbabwe, Uganda, Kenya, and a number of other countries. So, for example, we are in the UK somewhat ahead of the epidemic that is evolving in Malawi. And we were on a call with our colleagues there earlier in the week, and they were describing how it all felt a bit unreal because the numbers were quite small at that point, but everybody's sort of in limbo, not quite sure where things are going to go. And we were able to relate that to the feelings we had, as you can remember, back in February, March, where it wasn't quite clear what was happening. And I think being able to share some of our experience with them and sort of talking about how that was certainly a limbo feeling we had, but that it was important that they did do the planning. What we've seen over the last couple of weeks is that they've gone from a situation where they didn't have plans in place for personal protection equipment to now having quite a lot of that in place. They've also been able to think about some shielding programs for the elderly in some of the village communities in Malawi. So as I was saying earlier, the elderly, of course, are more susceptible. But the communities have come together in some of the rural areas to think about practical ways in which they could look after their elderly people and keep them somewhat shielded from the sort of person exchange that I was describing earlier. And also the other way around, we learn from them every time we share with them. They sort of come up with some ideas about how they're thinking about handling patients, handling their research studies. And we found that very helpful in some of our thinking about how we might now start thinking about opening up some of our own facilities.
Well, Bertie, the way you've explained stuff to me today, I know that you're the right person to be helping them at the beginning of their journey on the Corona coaster, when you talk about that kind of feeling of being unreal. Bertie Squire, thank you so much. Professor Bertie Squire, Dean of Clinical Sciences and International Public Health at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And thank you for explaining things so well to me.
Thanks for having me on.
You take care.